Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists about baseball books, music, film, pretty much anything you can fit on a bookshelf. And that's the slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. It's no secret that I'm not a huge fan of fantasy baseball. I have enough trouble keeping my checkbook in balance without putting together a fake team and keeping track of the day-to-day dealings and statistical upkeep that I would surely do, at least for a couple of weeks. But that doesn't mean I'm not interested in analytics or finding new ways to judge who's a cut above the rest. It's when I start thinking about it too deeply, that's when the headaches set in. Why does this formula attribute a figure of 0.73 to triples, not 0.75 or 0.64? In other words, who makes this stuff up, and why should we accept it? Ron Chandler, who also runs BaseballHQ.com, has been making a career out of providing data to fantasy general managers for more than two decades. If anyone can make sense of this to me, it's probably him. So I asked him to school me in the world of baseball numbers.
Ron Chandler, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Thanks, Ron. Good to be here.
So, you and I are of a similar age. When did you get into this fantasy baseball over?
Well, it was back in 1984. I stumbled onto the original Rotisserie League Baseball book in a B. Dalton's bookstore in Manchester, New Hampshire. And ironically, on that same bookstore trip, I also picked up my first copy of Bill James' Baseball Abstract. So it was kind of a bit of karma there that I found both those books at the same time, and that's really the direction my career eventually took. But it started back in 84.
Now you have made a career at this. This is the, if I remember correctly, the 26th edition of this book?
It's the 29th edition, actually.
Pardon me, 29th.
Yeah. So yeah, we're coming up on our big 30.
Can you point to one year or a period and say this is where fantasy baseball, as we know it now, because there's always been some sort of fantasy baseball, whether with Stratomatic or other board games. Mm-hmm. Can you point to a period and say this is where this version of fantasy baseball really took off?
Yeah, it was the late 90s, probably 97, 98, thereabouts, when the internet really took hold and people figured out that they could really play this game and reach a lot of people. You don't have to be in the same room to draft a team. You could be across the globe and still play fantasy baseball. And that's when it really took off. That's when it exploded. And actually, that's when I knew I had a viable business to make as a full-time career, because I've been full-time doing this now since 96. Yeah, 96.
So who was the first publisher for the book?
I've self-published it for many years until I sold the company to an organization called Fantasy Sports Ventures in 2008, which was then purchased by USA Today Sports Media Group in 2012. But I had self-published the book all through that time until that point.
And how difficult was that at that point? Because self-publishing was then not a big an endeavor as it is now.
Well, I came up through the publishing industry myself. Back in the early 80s, after I'd gotten out of college, I worked for Doubleday and Company for a while. And I learned the publishing company there and through some other companies I'd worked for. So I knew the industry pretty much well. I was in the direct marketing end of it, so I was mostly a direct marketer. So I knew how to get products off the ground and get them into the hands of people who wanted them. So I essentially leveraged my own professional experience in getting this business off the ground.
Now, one of the things I've lamented over the past decade or so, this is the time of year when baseball magazines start showing up on the newsstands and at the bookstores. And over the past few years, I've noticed there are many more magazines that are catering to the fantasy baseball crowd than the regular baseball publications. And even the regular baseball publications have some element of fantasy baseball within it. What are the qualities someone who's looking to get involved, like a total newbie, what should they look for when picking up a publication?
Well, you know, fantasy is a way to keep fans engaged in the game. And I think I personally believe that after the baseball strike in 94 and 95, that it was fantasy baseball that helped save the game, because people were pretty upset with the way things had transpired with the strike, and they were looking for a way to get back into the game. So fantasy, I think, was that gateway. And I think it's kept people engaged all through the years that way. The magazines and the explosion of magazines, I think, is kind of just in support of the internet boom and everything that's on the internet now. So getting involved in fantasy, it's become very, very easy as long as you're willing to be online. I think the magazines are kind of the stepping off point to finding an online source like Yahoo or ESPN, where there are low-level leagues that you can jump in and get involved in. And, of course, once you start building the knowledge base and become more of a hardcore, serious player, then there are other places you can go to play the game on a more serious level.
Now, this has turned into a billion-dollar industry, so there's a fair amount at stake. What separates, let's say, your book from, you know, Baseball Prospectus has a book that is used heavily for fantasy, Hardball Talk.
Hardball Times. Yeah.
Hardball Times puts out yeah. their own book. What separates yours from those guys?
Well, those guys are a little bit more founded in general baseball commentary and analysis, and we really gear our offerings to the fantasy player. It's fantasy first and real baseball second, whereas the others are baseball first and fantasy second. And I think it's the way the structure of the book, the way it's laid out, the way it's easy to find players and information you're looking for. So that's kind of the way we've designed the book over time.
Now, one of the things I noticed in going through the book is you have almost 60 data points / statistics. Some are standard, others are brand new. One of the things that stuck out in my mind was the PQS disaster rate. You know, some of these, and you even mentioned, you know, why is are you using this percentage rather than that percentage? You know, and I think that some people who would like to get involved in fantasy baseball, like myself, who are not math literate, they find some of this stuff daunting. So how can you tell us that it's okay to get involved in this?
Admittedly, there is a bit of a learning curve, but we try to keep it as simple as possible. One of the things funny, in the early days when I was publishing the book, I'd gotten a comment from a reader saying, you know, some of us are just English majors out here. Could you make this more understandable for us? And, you know, it's true. So I have worked really hard to try to make the information as accessible as possible. And you mentioned the PQS disaster rate, and that's kind of one of the ways we do it. You know, we're focused traditionally on earned run average. And my attitude is, if a pitcher goes out there and pitches one inning and gives up four runs, or whether he pitches three innings and gives up 10 runs, it's a disaster, no matter what the impact is on his ERA. Let's just call that a disaster. It's a bad outing. And so when we put out gauges like PQS dominance and PQS disaster, what we're basically saying is, what percentage of that pitcher's starts were dominating starts or disaster starts, without having to focus on the minutia of ERA or anything else. And I think that helps put more perspective on the pitcher, and is actually more projectable going forward as to what their future performance is going to be. So that's one of the ways that we try to make it a little bit more accessible.
One of the things I appreciate about your book is you have some caveats in there about, you know, these are guidelines. These are not, you know, absolute. This is not what's going to happen. These are projections of things that might happen given all the information.
Right, and my attitude is that we can't predict the future. Nobody here can sit here and predict the future, but we can put together different data points and take an educated guess at what future events might be on a general basis, what tendencies might be. So don't ask me how many home runs Miguel Cabrera is going to hit. I will tell you he will hit somewhere between 28 and 36 home runs, or 30 and 40 home runs. And that's got to be good enough, because really, when it comes down to it, that is the best we can project anyway. We can't project that he's going to hit exactly 35 home runs. If somebody projects he's going to hit 35 and he actually hits 35, he was just really lucky with his dart throws that day. So we want to just be able to get a sense of players' tendencies upward, downward, and that's really the best we can do.
And that's all things being equal, because you never know. Somebody like Jurickson Profar last year in spring training got hurt, was done basically for the season. So there go all the projections for him.
Absolutely. And you know, going back to Miguel Cabrera, I mean, everybody sees last year as a down year for him, given how many home runs he had hit over the previous years. But really, his performance last year was in a valid range of statistical significance, of statistical variability. We can say with a strong sense that that 25 home run season was well within what his talent, what his skills show he can do. So wasn't much of a down season at all. Now, of course, coming into this season, he's hurt, so we have to temper expectations a little bit. But, you know, given normal statistical variability, players can hit anywhere within a range of performance and still be displaying the same skill set.
Now, you have an interesting table in which you list four players with identical I'm trying to thumb through it now, but they have the identical, is it OPS?
Yes.
And you show, like, one is Altuve, a singles hitter for the Astros, singles and doubles hitters for the Astros with a lot of speed and a good eye. I forget who the other three are, but they have different variations of numbers that got them to that point, that OPS point. So it just goes the tyranny of numbers. You can't just go by a single number.
Right. And, yeah, the four players we're using, we pick four different players every year just to display that OPS is not the be-all and end-all to overall performance gauges. But we had the Carlos Gomez, Justin Upton, which and Lucas Duda, which are more power hitters, and Jose Altuve, which is a speedy guy with a high batting average. All four of them had an OPS around 830. So you really can't draw a comparison based on these overall gauges by themselves, because players display wide ranges of different skills.
And for the newbies out there, OPS is what?
On-base plus slugging percentage.
Now, what metrics have come to be accepted most in recent years? You see a lot of broadcasters and writers referring to WHIP, walks and hits per innings pitched, and OPS. Well, what else is out there that are more relatable? I know the counting stats like home runs and RBIs are in one category, and the percentages of batting average and slugging percentage and OPS are in another. So what has become more mainstream these days?
Well, on a more predictive basis, a lot of people are using what's called batting average on balls in play, which was developed about 15 years ago by a gentleman by the name of Boris McCracken. And what he proffered was that no matter what type of skilled pitcher you are, once that ball is hit, it's completely out of the pitcher's control what's going to happen to it. It's something that seemed completely counterintuitive, but he showed that back then players, pitchers like Pedro Martinez versus some fifth-level starter somewhere might have identical batting averages on balls in play, but have very, very different other peripheral skills. So that's helped us kind of get a sense of what direction a pitcher's ERA might take, because the batting average on balls in play, or BABIP, what we call it, tends towards 30%. No matter what type of pitcher you are, 30% of the batted balls are going to drop for hits. And so if a pitcher has an elevated ERA or a depressed ERA, we can project what direction that ERA is going to go based upon how far his BABIP is from 30%. So it works very, very well. It's been refined over the years, and it's becoming a little bit more mainstream now.
I'm just thinking in terms of baseball cards. I mean, back when I was a kid, you had two kinds of baseball cards. You had the vertical layout and the horizontal layout. And the vertical layout, by nature of its composition, had fewer stats on it. Excuse me. The horizontal had more stats. I wonder if any of these new stats will replace some of the old ones.
It's possible. You know, it's taken a while for even the major league stadiums now. You'll start seeing on-base average on the scoreboard, which you never saw before. I mean, when you and I were growing up on the TV screens, all we saw was home runs, RBIs, batting average. I mean, that was it. You know, wins, losses, ERA. And we were told those were the final words on how to evaluate talent on the batting and pitching side. And we've learned now that they're actually pretty lousy evaluators of talent. You know, batting average, it really evaluates all hits equally, and we know that, you know, home run's not the same thing as a single, and so we have slugging average and on-base average and gauges that take it up another notch. And I think ultimately that we might get to the point where there's more data overload, but I think right now I think we're at a comfortable place where the general population can get a good sense of baseball talent from the stats that are being used, and I probably wouldn't take it too much further than it is right now.
That's interesting. You mentioned information overload. Do you think that there's a tipping point where, I mean, you have, according to my definition, you have two kinds of fans, people who engage in fantasy baseball and people who don't. And sometimes I think the people who don't are, I don't think turned off is the right word, but they think that the fantasy baseball endangers the game to a degree. What would you say to that?
Well, I would disagree with that. I think fantasy baseball is something that has kept fans engaged over the years, which is very important as the game has changed. But, you know, I do worry about data overload because we're getting to the point now where we're trying to look for patterns and trends in whether somebody performs better in day games in the seventh inning when the wind's blowing 10 miles an hour north to northwest. I mean, it's gotten to the crazy point, but they are measuring things like that. And Major League Baseball Advanced Media, in fact, is coming out this season with some amazing metrics that actually track defensive alignments and how fast outfielders are moving to get to the ball, and we'll be able to pretty soon evaluate defensive players based on their speed and their trajectory of running and all sorts of things that for fantasy leaguers, they're always looking for an edge, so they're hoping something might come out of that. But I think we're rapidly getting to the point of data overload when we're looking at things like that.
What about broadcasters? How do you think they embrace these new statistics? I mean, you have the younger ones and the more traditional ones who are, you know, my age, a little older. Do you think there's a generational divide here?
I think there was a little bit. I think it was a lot more maybe 10 years ago, but I think that gap is starting to blur a little bit now. You know, we're the same age. We come from the same generation, and I think we recognize that there's a value in looking at both the advanced metric analysis of the game as well as the traditional. You know, let's go to the ballpark. It's great. It's the green grass. It's the wind is blowing. It's 75 degrees, and this is a wonderful, great game that goes back 100 years. And I think there's room for both of those types of approaches to enjoying this game. It's in many cases being able to integrate both and getting an even more robust, fuller enjoyment of the game. So I think from the broadcast side, even they're I think more of the broadcasters are starting to figure out how to integrate both approaches.
And I'll get you out of here on this. General managers have either are leaning more toward embracing a Moneyball type of philosophy. Can you envision a time where some of these fantasy baseball metrics might be used by general managers and teams in putting together their squads?
Oh, they already are. Several major league teams have already hired analysts from the fantasy realm. They're in the front offices now, folks from Baseball Prospectus are in the front office. One of my former, at baseballhq.com, my former minor league director is now a scout with the Cardinals. This is already happening. And, you know, Billy Beane and whole Moneyball approach was really just finding undervalued assets and trying to put together a team with talent and skill levels that others have not recognized. And these metrics help uncover those types of players. And right now, I'd say pretty much nearly every major league team has a statistical analyst on staff. Some have complete departments. So we're there. We're already there. We're fantasy, and then the advanced metrics are already inside the major league front offices.
The book is called Baseball Forecaster, an Encyclopedia of Fanalytics, now in its 29th year. And we've been talking with Ron Chandler. Ron, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Ron. It's great to do this.
And that was the Bookshelf Interview with Ron Chandler. Tune in again next time, and our guest will be Josh Behigian, author of the revised edition of 101 Baseball Places to See Before You Strike Out. And remember, for the latest news on baseball books and art and music and film and anything else you can think of that fits on a bookshelf, come back to Ron Kaplan's BaseballBookshelf.com. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
Said, boys, I'm glad I discovered this land.